When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Processing Blue. I'm Charlotte Observer sports columnist Scott Fowler. Joining me today is Charlotte Observer Panthers beat reporter Mike Kay, and we're going to talk about a very newsy day for the Panthers. They fired Scott Fitterer this morning. We're recording this on Monday afternoon after Scott Fitterer was fired by Dave Tepper this morning. And Mike, what were your initial thoughts when you found out that Scott Fitterer would no longer be the GM?
Well, when you make history by being the first 2-15 team in the history of the NFL, it's only been 3 years of 17-game seasons, but now the Panthers are the current, I guess, low mark on the totem pole as far as, you know, wins for this expanded season. It would have been hard to justify keeping anybody in a major role, and I think, listen, Scott Fitterer had been here for 3 years. I still think he had a lot of the Matt Rhule era, you know, weight on him. And look, this was his first season where he got final say, and pretty much anything that could have gone wrong went wrong. I don't think he owns everything solely. I think there is a lot for us to discuss in this podcast about what led to his inevitable departure, but for me, this was a campaign of terribleness all around. It was just an awful season to be in and around this Panthers team, and ultimately Scott Fitterer, Frank Reich, Josh McCown, and Deuce Staley are kind of the poster child's children for this ineptitude.
Yes, that was 2-15 is hard to do, and they did it in some incredible stats, damning stats that have come out of this season, including they never ran a play in front with a lead in the fourth quarter. In 17 games, they never were in front once. The two games they won on last play field goals, obviously. Another one I came across today, Christian McCaffrey, traded, of course, last year, scored 21 touchdowns for the San Francisco 49ers this year. The entire Panther offense only scored 20. So McCaffrey outscored them by himself, and that was emblematic the last 2 weeks where they got shut out two times in a row, first time in 15 years that had happened in the NFL. So again, as you mentioned, there's a lot of reasons. And number one with Scott Fitterer, I think, is that he was 14-37 in his 3 years here. However, he didn't have all misses. He had a few hits too. But what are, if you were looking at some of the personnel moves, some of the things that really caused that 14-37 record, Mike, what would be some you would point to?
Well, I think you look at compounded mistakes. They pursued Deshaun Watson, and so they only had a certain amount of money to make that move happen. They let Hassan Reddick leave in free agency. He's gone on to have two straight years of 10-plus sacks with the Eagles and made two Pro Bowls. You talk about Christian McCaffrey. Trading Christian McCaffrey made sense with the optics going into that. He was injury-prone. They'd kind of rooted him into the ground. They've rooted him into the ground. And you know what? If you could get the package that they got, awesome. Second, third, fourth, and fifth round picks for a running back in a league where the NFL has basically told you they don't value running backs. The only problem is they sent him to the perfect offense for him where he doesn't have to carry everyone and he can still have an MVP season. And then the Panthers used those picks on DJ Johnson and other things that kind of didn't make sense, led to more compounded mistakes. I think we look at the quarterback situation, that's going to forever be Matt Rhule's vice in this whole thing. And Scott Fitterer was there for two of those years. I mean, they traded up for Matt Corral, which in turn led to the trade up for DJ Johnson. There's just so many mistakes that were compounded by other mistakes. And I think to single out two or three would be very difficult because each mistake led to more mistakes.
Yeah, that's true. There was, I mean, a lot of times I would hear or see or hear Fitterer explain the reasoning behind trading Christian McCaffrey or not trading Brian Burns when they had two first and a third on the table. And you'd think, well, he did get a pretty good deal for McCaffrey, especially his injury prone. Then suddenly McCaffrey resurrected himself and is absolutely the best running back in the NFL. So maybe they weren't going to put that much money in the running back position. No, then they ended up signing Miles Sanders for too much money. Miles Sanders has had a really bad year in the first year of a four-year deal. So as you say, a lot of times, you've said this to me before, but his process a lot of times seemed to make sense, but then it didn't end up working out. In practice, it was the theory seemed good. The reality was bad.
Right. I think process and practice are two different things. Those are two things. When I analyze something, we talk about it all the time, off camera, on camera. Process is different than practice. And another thing I always talk about is people remember how you make them feel. His GM tenure made a lot of fans feel alienated from the history of this team, the superstars of this team. I mean, to treat DJ Moore and Christian McCaffrey within, you know, 8 months of each other, then you wonder what is actually happening on offense. I think it needs to be said that Scott Fitterer is an extremely well-liked person in that building, an extremely well-liked person within the NFL. Teams like to work with them. Agents like to work with them. And sometimes that can be your downfall. You know, the old saying, nice guys finish last. I think sometimes he was too collaborative in the building. I think there were times where he let some others' opinions influence him, just from the outside looking in. And so I think, Scott, you know, you're the columnist. I'm just curious. I think we've been very, you know, we've told both sides of this in our writing on CharlotteObserver.com, but from your perspective, you were here for all 3 years. When did you start to kind of notice that this wasn't working?
I would say as soon as, it never really worked, right? So I think that the part of it that I was really surprised at is they never could figure out quarterback. Here's one thing I think, Mike, that people sort of overlook. They really thought they had gotten it done with Matt Stafford, and that was within Fitterer being here a couple of weeks into what ended up being 3 years of being employed here. If Matt Stafford had come here, if he hadn't been swayed at the last minute by the Rams, I wonder if not everything would have been different and Fitterer still would be here and they would have made the playoffs at least once during that time, because quarterback, they've never solved it. So I think, as they kept throwing darts against the wall trying to figure out quarterback, I started thinking to myself, well, maybe it's just not as nice of a guy as Scott Fitterer is. Maybe it's just not going to work. This year, again, the trade for Bryce Young, I think, will be the one people remember for him. You know, he'll probably be remembered for trading away McCaffrey, I think, and trading for Bryce Young. For better or for worse, those were the two biggest deals to me that he made. DJ Moore, to me, not as big of a deal, maybe one step below those two. But that trade for Bryce Young, that's the one that, you know, maybe in 5 years people go, hey, that was actually a pretty good deal Fitterer made. Or maybe people go, well, C.J. Stroud has now been in the playoffs and the Pro Bowl four times. That was a horrible move. That was the one that didn't work. That's the one that got, I think, Frank Reich fired. And that's the one, really, I think, because it didn't work out quick enough, that got Scott Fitterer fired. But if you were going to narrow it down to one personnel move that he made in his tenure that didn't work out, would it be that one or would it be something else?
I mean, I think Brian Burns is the one that's the most polarizing. I understood why he didn't want to trade away everyone. You know, they were still trying to let Steve Wilks prove himself. Obviously, compounded mistake. You let him do that, and he proved himself, and then you didn't hire him, right? Par for the course with this organization. I think look, McCaffrey, up until they used the picks for that thing, was a pretty solid trade. I mean, it worked out for everybody, and then it doesn't matter what these magic beans are if you use them on the wrong player, right? So, I don't know. I think the compounded mistakes of McCaffrey trade, you know, trading the face of your organization and then turning that into DJ Johnson and basically Jonathan Mingo in a fifth round pick next year, like, major yikes. I've talked and written about the day two hijinks of this Panthers organization probably more times than I can remember, but that will always stick out to me is day two, the way that those McCaffrey picks were turned into two guys that I just, even if they do work out, it doesn't feel like you got a lot of return on investment there. Here's what I think we do need to shift to, because we haven't really talked about David Tepper. And I think, like, the pendulum needs to kind of swing towards him. Because if you remember, you know, during his press conference, he kind of alluded to being kind of the tiebreaker in a lot of moves if there was, you know, a disconnect or, you know, whatever. He was part of that leadership committee that hired Reich. He was part of the group that scouted the quarterback. He was part of all that. Yes, it ultimately falls on the GM. But it's kind of laughable to me that, you know, I know, you know, there are reports out there that he has hired a consulting firm. This job does not seem appealing to me at all on the surface. You don't have the first overall pick. Yes, you have a lot of cap space, but there's like a dozen teams that have just as much or more. You know, you have to be all in on Bryce Young. If you weren't, then it's probably not the job for you. There's this offense is basically needing a complete reworking. Your two of your best three players are about to become free agents on defense. Like, there's a lot here to take in. I'm just curious, Scott, from your perspective with Tepper, like, how does this job appeal to you, you know, if you're a candidate?
No. I'd make sure I signed a guaranteed contract, that's for sure. All the money has to be absolutely guaranteed, because we've seen what happens. He will hire his, if you include interim head coaches, he'll hire his seventh head coach in 6 years. And while Scott Fitter had three subpar years here as a GM, Dave Tepper has now been here for six as an owner. So there were 3 years before Scott Fitter where he didn't have anything to do with it, and was part of a winning organization in Seattle where the Panthers were floundering around. And that's no coincidence. I think I looked this up, Mike. Tepper will, the next game he is the owner for the Panthers in September, will be his 100th game as the Panthers owner. So he's been here 99, and they've lost 68 of those 99. So what we've seen here and the, you know, the fan base feeling as bad as it does right now is all a product of that. When Dave Tepper came here in May of 2018, when he first was voted in as being able to, them taking his bid to buy the Panthers from Jerry Richardson, he said, the first thing I care about is winning. The second thing I care about is winning. And it was all in about winning, and how he had been part of a winning organization as a minority owner in Pittsburgh, et cetera. And that just has not happened. So that's part of the reason why I have been very critical of Dave Tepper in a number of my columns. I think he should take a step back. As I said in one, I think he should fire himself. I don't mean he needs to sell the team. I mean he needs to get away. Hire this coach and then hire a GM. And then step back and let these two presumably very smart people do their jobs.
Yeah, and I think from the outside perspective, just talking to people around the league, you know, from a coaching perspective, it might be difficult to get in some really good assistant coaches in here because while coaching contracts are guaranteed, assistant coaching contracts typically come with offset language. So let's say you're moving from LA or Las Vegas or Seattle or whatever, and you're uprooting your family to Charlotte. Well, given recent history, if you're only here for a year and a half, 2 years, as much as you might make as an assistant coach, you're also spending money to travel. You're spending money to move into a new house. You're moving your family. You're uprooting everybody. And that could scare some people. I know we talked about it in the last podcast, but like the head coaching job is going to be very interesting because I don't know how this is anyone's first choice unless you are so sold on Bryce Young that you would have made the same trade that Scott Fitterer and Frank Reich and David Tepper made. And I don't know if with hindsight, there's that person out there as good as Bryce Young could be in the future. And so I think, you know, this team needs somebody to really, I mean, look, I think two straight shutouts are going to tell you that hiring an offensive minded guy is probably going to be on the mind of Tepper. But I just think he's not going to have his pick of the litter. I don't care what money is around. Maybe he does lend Ben Johnson. Maybe he does lend, you know, somebody like Dan Quinn. But I'm telling you, this is going to be a tough sell to most of the candidates unless they just really want a head coaching job because it's going to be hard to build an all-star staff again, whatever that means.
And that didn't really even work out anyway. I don't care about an all-star staff. You know, I always thought that was overblown. What's the problem is players. I don't think they have enough good players on this team. I don't care who's coaching.
Well, and that would tell you that firing Scott Fitterer essentially was based on that, right?
Let me ask you this, because I don't know the answer, and I bet you got a good opinion on it. Which comes first? And give me your possible dates, GM or coach, which one is hired first, and your predictions on not who they are yet, we'll talk about that in a second, but when they are.
So I just spoke to the league. The league told me that the Panthers can talk to GMs, whether they're GM candidates, whether they're employed or not right now. They can be hired while their teams are still in the playoffs pending approval by the current teams. They also have to interview at least two candidates who are either persons of color or women before they can make a hire to satisfy the Rooney Rule. Same can't be said for head coaches. There's a lot of rules with that tampering. If a candidate's not in the playoffs, the Panthers can interview them after 3 days of their season ending. So the four teams that had their season end on Saturday, those guys would not be available until Tuesday. The folks that ended their season on Sunday won't be available until Wednesday. The two top seeds in the playoffs, they have their bye week this week. They will be able to interview virtually if the Panthers have interest. And then from there, you're not having in-person interviews until the 22nd. So logic says that a GM could fill the role early. Now, you've got to think about pairing, right? Like there's the Shanahan collective, as I like to call it. You know, a lot of guys have the same age, Min and Richmond Flowers. That could be like a matchmaking thing. There are some pretty good connections to Dan Morgan out there. If Dan Morgan was to get a real shot, as of right now, he is still with the team and in charge of personnel movement. I think that the GM could get hired, but that could mean that it's a matchmaking situation. If they interview a head coach and he says, you know, I want to work with so-and-so, they hire so-and-so, maybe that's the way it goes and you just have to take them at their word.
I could see that. Yeah, right. Matchmaking does make sense. And I also think Morgan's going to get at least some shot at this position. Well, you've written a story very in-depth on charlotteobserver.com about 18 different potential GM candidates for the Panthers. Let's not go through all 18, but give me 4 or 5 that you think are really at least maybe going to get an interview.
Well, we talked about Ben Johnson earlier. The assistant GM for the Lions is Ray Agnew, came over from the Rams 3 years ago with Brad Holmes. to kind of rebuild this Detroit Lions team. Agnew is a former defensive lineman for the Patriots. He went to NC State. He's from Winston-Salem. Kind of a perfect storm of PR right there, right? And interviewing him would also satisfy part of the Rooney Rule. He's been a scout in league circles for over 20 years. If Ben Johnson has a good relationship with him, maybe, you know, Ben Johnson is rumored to be the favorite, you know, for this, or at least a favorite of Tepper's. That could make a lot of sense. Obviously, we talked about Tepper having ties to Pittsburgh. Assistant GM Andy Weidel, who I covered in Philadelphia, is a really good collaborator. Kind of sounds familiar, huh? But he's been with the Ravens, the Steelers, and the Eagles over the last, you know, 10 years. And those are three of the five most successful teams over the last decade, and so on. And so you typically want to hire people from those walks of life because they know what makes a successful team. I think you look at somebody, you know, like a Dan Morgan, another guy who knows the operation. And here's the thing, we talked about it earlier. He was clearly in on the Bryce Young pick and the trade up. Having a like-minded person who has that investment makes sense. He's also worked with guys who might be interviewed, like Dave Canales, who's the offensive coordinator for the Buccaneers. He's worked with Dan Quinn, who is going to be a hot candidate as well. I think when you look at the list that I created, I've got some, you know, wild cards who aren't necessarily assistant GMs. I think the two other guys who are going to be in talks with every GM job are Ian Cunningham, the assistant GM from Chicago, and Adam Peters, the assistant GM for the 49ers. Now, Cunningham interviewed for the assistant GM job when Morgan was hired, and Peters interviewed for the GM job when Fitterer was hired. You know, we've seen, you know, at least from the outside looking in, that there should be some regret over not hiring Steve Wilks. Well, these two guys got passed on. Maybe this is the opportunity to amend that. And so I think those two guys are going to be the two hottest candidates on the market. You know, another guy, just a quick sixth guy that I think we need to be talking about a little bit, knowing how much you like to write about Davidson. It's former Davidson corner Jeff Scott, who's the director of football operations for the Philadelphia Eagles. He's got a really nice mixture of analytics, salary cap, and personnel in his background. He's a younger guy, could grow in the role. We heard Tepper talk about how he wanted a head coach for the next 20 years to speak at, or 30 years to speak at his funeral, so to speak. Jeff Scott's a guy who could be in there for a really long time. I've heard really positive things about him. It'll be worth monitoring him as they go forward because he does have the Carolina background. He went to Davidson. He knows the area. And, you know, I mean, this city really embraces a hometown hero. And so maybe that's part of the selling point.
Well, I mean, Davidson's football program is so well known. You can't, it's no bigger than Davidson football. I mean, perhaps Michigan or Texas or Alabama, but Davidson football, that's big. That's big time. I'm teasing, of course. But yeah, that would be, I think any local connection is helpful, but not necessary. And then as we start to close here, let's talk one more time about coaches, because that's the person who's going to get the lion's share of the attention. And as you mentioned, this may not happen till the end of January. I look back and I think Frank Reich's press conference was around January 31st or something last year. So we could be looking, and he was hired maybe 4 or 5 days before that. So perhaps it'll be a late January thing by the time they get there. If you were a betting man, give me your odds. Give me your top three odds, you know, guys that you would, given all the parameters, not just who Dave Tepper wants, but who he might actually be able to get.
I'm going to put Frank Smith at the top. I think, learning from Frank Reich calling plays probably, you know, you want an offensive-minded guy, but play calling that shouldn't be a prerequisite. I think he's a guy, you know, the Miami Dolphins offensive coordinator is really intriguing. He does a lot of stuff behind the scenes. He's a former offensive lineman. He's worked with tight ends. He's worked with the offensive line. He's worked with an entire offense. And he has the background, obviously, with Mike McDaniel, who has the most explosive offense in the league. I think you look at Bobby Slowick, who might be a year away, but if you look at what he's doing with the Texans, it feels like there's a guy wide open 15 to 20 yards downfield every single play. I mean, he has helped D'Amico Ryans really turn around the Texans. That team earned the number two overall pick last year, and now they're the AFC South champions, and the hard way, by the way. They're 10-7. And so they're going to get to experience a playoff run, which is pretty remarkable. And then I think, you know, if Ben Johnson is willing to take the money, I mean, I guess he's the guy that makes a lot of sense. He's from Asheville. He went to UNC. He's really, really smart. And he has the same agent, just like Slowick and Frank Smith, as Evero. And so you're looking at, you know, if you want to keep Evero, you probably want to keep somebody in that Shanahan collective. And so I think that would be interesting. We're seeing jobs open up. I think we counted five as of recording: Washington, Carolina, Las Vegas, LA Chargers, and Atlanta. And there could be more. Obviously, there's a lot of rumors around New England and Tennessee, but let's say there's seven openings. Let's say there's six openings. I mean, I don't know who is saying that this is their favorite job. And maybe it is somebody's favorite job, but I think the adage of there's only 32 of these jobs is going to be used quite a bit over the next several weeks to kind of couch how dire of a situation this seems like on the surface. But with that said, though, do you think it is a die? Like, I mean, what hope is there for this franchise as we almost get out of here?
Well, right. Yeah. Sure. I mean, you look no further than what Houston did this year. This happens every year in the NFL. I think there's four or five teams that made the playoffs that weren't in it last year, maybe half a dozen. It's always like that. Here's one thing you can be hopeful for. They're not in a very good division. I mean, that Tampa Bay team sucks. That Tampa Bay team will immediately lose its first round playoff game this weekend, I think. Three field goals yesterday. A halfway decent team would have beaten them. Baker Mayfield kind of limping around there, and you know they couldn't really score. Their defense was pretty good, and of course they're like 5-1 in their last six. So I guess I'm being too hard on them. But in any case, what I'm saying is the NFC South is not very good. So there is not a juggernaut. Kansas City is not in your division, or somebody like that who's just going to win the division every year. So that it's open if they'll just find some playmakers. I wrote a long story people might want to be in, if you haven't looked back at it, that was right before Fitterer got fired, but kind of inside what went wrong this year, some of the playmakers, some of the missteps, some of all these, you know, kind of just a very disastrous season. But all that said, as we've said many times, and it's happened in Panthers history several times, a year or two later, you can be right in the thick of things. They got to get Bryce some help. That's number one, two, and three. Got to score some points. These last two shutouts were humiliating, absolutely humiliating. Final thoughts, Mike, and then I'll wrap us up.
Well, my final thoughts are there's a light at the end of the tunnel one way or another, right? If you want to change, you got change. If you wanted a clean slate, you got a clean slate. If you wanted the season to end, well, that happened, mercifully.
Yes.
This season, I'd imagine fans have really been through it, but I've watched a lot of bad football, and I love football. You know, football's up there with family, right? Like, it for me, I really love football, and that was a tough watch. I think... this team has a good core on defense. If they're able to keep Evero, I think that there's some progress there to be made. Offensively, I mean, there's nothing nice to say. Bryce Young has some potential, but there's really nothing nice to say about the offense other than Bryce Young's upside and Adam Thielen being able to catch 9.5-yard passes. I mean, that's really what it is. And so they really...
That's what's got to be fixed. That's right.
They need to retool everything.
And we should mention that we're going to go in... We have not talked much about specifics on players and free agency and all that, which you've written a lot about. But we're going to have a whole podcast episode on that coming up probably next week. But we're just... This one we have been decided to talk specifically about Fitterer and the coach and and all the news, Mike. I don't know how you've been able to do it. You've written about 300 stories in the last 2 weeks.
I'm very tired, and by the looks of this video, I am very tired. I mean, I look very tired as well, but you know, I got to say, you know, to everybody who is following, like, I will do the recap next week, but to everybody who's embraced Processing Blue and, you know, everybody who has read our coverage throughout the off season, we really do appreciate it. I mean, it's an honor to work with Scott. Alex Zutlow is tremendous. Langston, I've really enjoyed getting to know working on this podcast. Drew, our wonderful producer, thank you for all you do for this podcast. And you know, if you watched along and read along last off season, you know that nobody does the off season better than the Charlotte Observer. So stay tuned to us, and we will continue to bring you all the information, analysis, reporting, all that stuff. And keep your eye on Processing Blue. This has been kind of a labor of love for a lot of people, and we've had some really great guests on here, and I'm rambling, but that's kind of my lot in life. So I'll toss it back over to Scott.
Well, you're right. And please, yeah, don't forget, we ain't going anywhere. The season is over, but the off season is where a lot of games are won and lost, as we saw this year. So we will, there'll be tons of coverage on charlotteobserver.com. Thanks for the embrace of Processing Blue. As Mike said, we've been really pleased with how people have responded to it. And thanks, as always, for listening. Now, if you haven't already, because we are going to be dropping some more episodes in the off season, please subscribe. Follow us wherever you get your podcast. You just need to look up Processing Blue. You'll find it. For those who watch us on YouTube, please subscribe to our YouTube channel and click on the bell icon to get notified of whenever new episodes drop. Finally, be sure to stick to charlotteobserver.com for all the latest Carolina Panthers news and analysis. And Mike and I and Alex and Langston and Drew, we'll see you next time.